This is Paul Jędrzejczyk. Welcome to Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined by Tommy Allen. Tommy's part of Allen Flaghar Studio at Tanglefoot, and Jen Schaub and Annie DeYoung. We're going to be chatting about art downtown Friday, April 12th, 400 artists, 30 venues, and we're going to be chatting about the Grand Rapids art scene. How you doing today, guys?
Great.
Good morning.
So I'd love it if each of you could kind of start out, tell me a bit about how you're involved in the Grand Rapids art scene these days.
Whoa,
Tommy?
Let me tell you, Paul.
Well, Tommy.
I know, we're first thing in the morning here, and you're having your first cup of coffee, maybe. How is it, or how am I involved in it?
Yeah, how are you involved? I know you've been Grand Rapids since the 80s.
Since the 80s, back when it was
old
Dinosaur Land. It was crazy back in the 80s. I mean, but one of the things that stuck out right away was artists tend to seek community. They tend to find other people like them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not uncommon that our early arts community really did kind of travel in the same kind of circles as we see today, with artists going to art gallery openings, showing up at certain restaurants that people talk about that they want to be at. And what we've seen is this culture, even as we've grown, we still see the community has grown as well, and it has many different pockets or groups of artists that have formed. So For me, what I really liked about the community right away was the welcoming aspect of it, and I still think that's there. It's a very supportive mm-hmm. community. And the same arguments are always there that have been there for like 30 years now, that we'd really like a critique, or we like more seriousness and everything, and yet we have West Michigan Nice to deal with. But the reality is, if you want a critique, you can get it here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice to have artists who are supportive here for the other artists, who go out of their way to make sure that we create the city we want to live in.
Sure.
And that's really been exciting, not only for me as an artist, but for many other artists I know that have made Grand Rapids their home over the years.
Mm-hmm. Jen?
I have been hanging out in the Grand Rapids art scene since the early aughts. So I kind of started when I was in college and then stuck around. I kind of thought that maybe I would leave Grand Rapids after my undergraduate and go get my graduate degree somewhere else, but I kind of fell in love with the city, fell mm-hmm. in love with different parts of the city, and haven't left, and probably am going to be a lifer. I have been involved in a lot of different projects, but probably most notably the Avenue for the Arts along South Division. And mm-hmm. so I work a lot with the artists in residence who use that as a gathering space focused on using the arts as economic development tool, as a center point for community, mm-hmm. as a creative problem-solving tool, and then also trying to build an economy of art, or strengthen the existing economy, because I don't want to say that there hasn't been mm-hmm. or isn't one here, but I think a lot of times we're looking at how we can activate those recent graduates out of
sure.
school and get them involved, and that's how artists like Annie join us. Annie?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit newer to it because I just graduated a couple years ago, but the Avenue for the Arts has been a great way to get involved, and Grand Rapids specifically
mm-hmm.
Just has a lot of opportunities for new artists,
mm-hmm.
and so I've just kind of jumped in, and specifically with the Avenue, and now I'm helping promote events and helping, just being involved in that way. So
how old were you when you decided to get involved in art? What inspired you to begin creating?
Well, I'll jump in here because I'm the oldest. I think really with art, it's been a lifelong journey. I'm reminded when I go home to see my grandmother, who's 80, no, she's 90 something. Oops, sorry, 95. When I went home to see her right out of college, I noticed that she had some early works that I had done on her wall of her, as grandmother does. She
okay.
just kind of lets artwork take over every available space. So she had a few pieces I'd done. So I kind of had a chance to look and see firsthand some of the things that I was really attracted to as an artist. So I think really it was a combination of my grandmother giving me space, but also my father being a photographer during World War II.
Mm.
That really got me thinking about how photography and art could be a vehicle for storytelling or sharing of feelings or expressing of some sort of complex emotions. So I think really my journey really began probably in my teens.
Okay.
And then really took hold when I got into college, when I started to realize that this was something I could do, but it was also something I could communicate with as well, very well. And then it just kind of grew.
This is Jen. I have really amazingly supportive parents. They both have an art background from Grand Valley, and so I think that within my family we all have ties to the art world somehow. My sister works at the UICA. I work on the Avenue and have a printmaking degree, and I feel like my start in the arts was, I don't even remember if there was a start. I think that it was something that was fully integrated within our family. We spent a lot of time going to museums when I was a kid. My parents sent me to Blue Lake. I mean, there was every opportunity afforded in a small rural community, mm-hmm. you know, to get involved with the arts. And then when I went to college, I started really investigating my own interest in printmaking, which is something that I had started developing in high school. And now my personal practice still really, really revolves around making highly intensive personal work, but my public practice maybe is really in activating the arts community. And there's definitely some... There are fewer distinctions in the art world now between, you know, public action as a form of art versus something that's handmade and held. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think that they're just two separate bodies of work.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of a mistake for me, really. I was...
I was on my way to the science lab, and boom, well, I tried to make a
those are always the best stories.
I actually went into Kendall as an interior designer, and I ended up hating that, completely hating it, and changed to photography, and my professors just really convinced me how great art was and the different ways that I could use it to speak about what I wanted to say. So, going to Kendall really, well, my high school art teacher kind of filled out my application and sent it in for me. So, but anyways, that's how it's a mistake. So just kind of getting involved in the community with the combination of being an art student at Kendall and just moving forward. So
I think something Jen said is really funny. I want to try to banter for a second, if I might, was the works that we're kind of embarrassed by as we get older that our parents remind us of. And I'm always reminded when I go home, my dad... Every time, and my dad's really old, and so he's now at that stage where you repeat the stories over and over again, even when you tell them not to. And he always comes back, he says, you know, that piece that you did in high school, your senior year of, and it was it was like late 70s or 80s. So this is the beginning of Ronald Reagan, which my dad was never happiest. But but I did this piece based upon the gate at in Iran where the hostages were.
Okay.
And so all the American, and so, you know, here is this picture, this invisible hand with the key coming. I know it's spiritual art. I went to a religious school, but here's this religious hand, you know, detached from like who knows where the other part of the body is. But, you know, the zombie hand coming in to open up this gate, and it just says, let my people go. And my dad loves that piece. And I look at this now and I just go, ooh. But, you know, at the same time, going back to what you said about art and the difference between what operates as something as an object you hold and what things are actually part of a greater public conversation, I think it should have been also, to me, a big clue as to how I would look at politics and how the artist not just is a part of society, but how it can also impact society.
Right.
So I think it's really, my painting or my piece did not, and it was a painting, drawing actually, did not get the hostages released. It was Ronald Reagan, I think. But
maybe it was the painting.
But my dad thinks
it
didn't help.
I just didn't think it was.
You know? But I didn't know if you had any similar experience like that, where some paintings you go back and you look at them and you go, wow, that I'm still working those things out as an artist.
All of them. I'm pretty sure of that. I mean, a lot of my work, it's really a self-absorbed narcissistic work that like doubles as therapy. So I would say that I'll never be done kind of working through some of my personal emotional content. It doesn't connect quite on as broad of a plane as some of the other things that I'm involved with that have to do with the arts or with like social justice issues, but I think that we use art for different things, right? And so mine's extremely personal.
Well, when you say it's narcissistic, how specifically is it narcissistic?
They're all about her.
Yeah, they are. They're all about me. But it's self-portraiture.
Okay, self-portraiture.
And
okay.
It's really about analyzing current relationships in between myself and other people in my life. A lot of times they're romantic relationships. It's the identity of you know, being a female within you know, a community setting, within a public setting, what I'm excelling at or where I'm failing, which I think those might be like larger, more relevant themes, but
okay.
I think that often they're put in extremely, they're kind of presented as fables.
Okay.
So a lot of times the figures are like myself and a bear or and a flock of geese, and that might not translate, you know, to the storyline quite as directly, and I do that a little bit, so it does open up
okay.
that for people's interpretation, but they are very, very self-centered. Yeah.
Now, Tommy, you've been doing some printmaking recently. You've been doing Abraham Lincoln prints. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that project for you.
Well, I think on the surface, it's very easy to say it's a pop-based, pop-inspired process that I'm working with. And it's very easy to draw the lines back to things like Warhol. I do think every artist, though, in what we do, we tend to draw lines anyways through art history. And if you don't draw them, somebody else will draw them for you, mm-hmm. which is the critic often. But for me, it's really always been a fascination of mine to whether it's in photography on traditional paper or in printmaking, or even in this aspect of combining prints with, you know, printmaking with painting and screen prints. One of the things I've really liked over time has been this idea that you could factory things, and thus mm-hmm. it was called the factory. But I grew up in a factory town of Flint, so
okay.
it was not unusual to see beautiful things come off the line that were the products of many steps,
mm-hmm.
and they could be identical.
Okay.
You know, they could have slight variations. So I've always been attracted to silk screening because of that situation. On the other side of it, Abraham Lincoln is somebody, I think, who has incredible, iconic status in our world,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of what he was able to do or what the myth says that he was able to do. And what I mean by that is that we tend to make people and individuals into icons over mm-hmm. time, and that whether they were great or not, over time in our hands, we propel these images forward. So what I've been doing is I've been looking at the image of Abraham Lincoln as a process for me, and deliberately throwing myself into a year of looking at that portrait and seeing how it evolved, how I evolved through the process, what do I learn about it. And it's just ironic that when I was beginning this process, we were also coming out with a film, not we, but as a culture,
right.
we were coming out with a lot of films about Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Started off the year with a vampire one, you know, which is kind of crazy.
Oh, no.
And then you have one that's a much different telling of the story mm-hmm. of Lincoln. But again, a lot of these things are all told through not firsthand references. I mean, it's a combination.
Right.
It's many layers that come together. And that's really what I was trying to do and still trying to do is every month going into the studio and coming up with another round of images and seeing where it's going to take me as an artist. And I do see it as training for me, too,
mm-hmm.
because as an artist, too, like Jen here, to dedicate on one body of work, on one thing, one idea, and really push it forward, you can learn a lot about mm-hmm. not only the process, but also about how you respond to the image and how the image will develop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, April 12th, Jen, you got Art Downtown coming up, 400 artists, 30 venues. What sparked the interest for Art Downtown and showed you that there would be a community interest in the event?
Well, we actually started Art Downtown like 6 or 7 years ago. It began as a different event called Spring for the Arts, and mm-hmm. and about 5 years ago, we did a rebranding and it became Art Downtown. And we kind of stuck with that name because it's easy to identify what's going on. Art, it's happening downtown. So over the last couple of years, the event has really grown. We started with 20-some venues. We're close to 40 now.
Mm-hmm.
So we just started doing our final counts and we're going to have probably around 38 participating venues. So
okay.
that's kind of exciting. All of our promo material says 30 because that's kind of where we've fallen in the last 2 years, but I think it's going to be significantly higher than that. And I think that the thing that really showed us that people were interested in the event is just the amount of individuals are interested in participating.
Okay.
So for us, it is driven by the participation. And so the size of the event is driven by participation. And hopefully those participants help to promote the event and therefore grow the attendance and the audience as well.
Are there some specific venues that you feel folks should have on their radar?
You know, we, in those 38 venues, we have some really great ones. Annie, what are some of the venues that you're the most excited about?
Well, definitely Site Lab, of course, you know, that's always a good time. But other ones, I would think that the Ice Cream Gallery has a lot going on.
On Division.
Yep, on yeah. Division there. Hugo Claudine's going to be in there having some work. The Deck's always a great place to go. We were talking about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The Deck's kind of interesting this year because they're going to be doing a performance-based piece.
Okay.
So it's a collaboration with a couple of different artists, including Ritsu, and I believe that Hugo's in there. And so they're going to be doing a performance. So that's one of the things I love about this event, is that there are so many different types of work going on.
Well, and performance is great, too, you should mention, because when it happens, if you miss it, you really do miss it. Mm-hmm. Because the other pieces, a lot of times, if they're based in the physical world and how they're created and presented, you may miss it and you have a chance to catch it later. But with performance, it really is mm-hmm. not just about the piece itself. It's also the environment it's being performed in, all those elements, the weather. They can all play a factor in that experience.
And especially with Ritsu, I mean, incredibly talented violinist, and I first came to know her Art Prize 2009. She had Fearscape up at the old Federal Building, and so that's definitely one not to be missed. Sight Lab is always one that's included. What do they have on tap this year?
Beer, hopefully.
Well,
they do always have the beer. But one of the things that they're working on this year, they're actually doing a letterpress show, and so they're going to be creating a lot of work on site over the next month, getting ready for the show. And they have they're inviting different groups of printmakers from around the state and around Grand Rapids to participate, and all the work will be made at that building. So it's the old Jefferson, it's the old public museum at 54 Jefferson.
Right.